like to acknowledge that the land which we are gathered on today is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe Nation, specifically the Chippewa Tri-Council, comprised of the Chippewas of Beausoleil, Rama, and Georgina Island First Nations, and more recently, the Mississaugas of the Credit River First Nation. Ontario is covered by 46 treaties and other agreements and is home to many Indigenous nations from across Turtle Island, including the Inuit and the Métis. These treaties and other agreements, including the One Dish with One Spoon Wampum Belt Covenant, are agreements to peaceably share and care for the land and its resources. Other Indigenous nations, Europeans, and newcomers were invited into this covenant in the spirit of respect, peace, and friendship. Most of us have come here as settlers, immigrants, or newcomers in this generation or generations past. We are all treaty people. Every day, we are mindful of broken covenants, and we strive to make this right. We commit to collaborating based on the foundational assumption that Indigenous peoples have their power, strength, and competency to develop culturally specific strategies for their communities. We are dedicated to honoring Indigenous self-determination, history, and culture, and are committed to moving forward in the spirit of reconciliation and respect with all First Nation, Métis, and Inuit people.
Good morning.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Beyond the Stethoscope, a podcast focused on hospice palliative care. My name is Linda Meeks, and I'm one of the education facilitators for the North Simcoe Muskoka Hospice Palliative Care Network. And I would like to introduce you today to Julie Layton Phelps, who is a colleague at the network. And today, Julie will be discussing medical assistance in dying and organ tissue donation. Morning, Julie. And I always like to say you're the resident expert on these topics, so welcome.
Thank you.
So to start off, could you tell us why you've chosen to discuss medical assistance in dying and organ tissue donation?
Yeah, so my other previous year's podcasts have been on medical assistance in dying, and I wanted to keep expanding on the different aspects of this topic as time goes on. And the one thing that I had kind of really noticed is that, you know, we haven't done a lot about organ donation and tissue donation, especially with a May death. So I thought I'd do some research into this topic, and then hopefully for other healthcare professionals, they could approach the doctors on, you know, have you considered asking your patient about organ and tissue donation?
And just before the podcast, we were speaking briefly. I think you mentioned that next month is it organ April. And tissue donation month? April.
April 2024 will be organ and tissue donation month. And yeah, so I will explain the link if people want to sign up to be a donor or to get more information.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. I think this is a great topic, and I'm looking forward to this podcast. So can you review to start off the current MAID legislation for Ontario?
Sure. It's an ever-changing topic and with different legislation. So yeah, I'm going to review what is current and then kind of some of the future issues. So in all the years that MAID has been legal, I've never really kind of thought that people could donate their organs and tissue. So we're going to explain that when I explain the changes of the legislation. So the current legislation, there were some changes in 2021 that now involves a two-track system. So one is when the person's death is reasonably foreseeable, and the other is when the death is not reasonably foreseeable. There's a lot of give when the government did these legislative changes on what qualifies as a reasonable death for time frame and not. So that is up to the individual physician's interpretation. So for a track one MAID request, there only needs to be one witness on the clinician aid A form. It used to be two, now it's only one. And now that witness can be a healthcare worker if their organization allows. Now, my experience since these changes, most organizations do not allow their staff to be that witness just for conflict of interest. Also with the track one, once they're approved by two doctors or two NPs, the 10-day reflection period is no longer in effect. And then also they can give what's called advanced consent in case of cognitive deterioration before their chosen date. That doctor or nurse practitioner providing the intervention can still go ahead and perform the procedure if the client cannot give competent consent on the day of. So that is definitely only for tract one.
Right.
In the case for
a tract, just to interrupt for a second, Julie, just to clarify, track one is when a person's death is reasonably foreseeable.
Yes, for sure. So for track two MAID procedure, death is not reasonably foreseeable and it's due to illness or disability. Basically meaning their condition is not terminal, where death would occur roughly in a year or so. This track is definitely more controversial and many people have ethical objections to this legislative change to the Criminal Code of Canada. Specifically, the legal changes include a 90-day reflection period, and one of the assessors must be a specialist in that condition or disability that the person is suffering from. And then the other significant change is that advanced consent piece does not apply to a track two. So basically, that means that the person has to give competent consent on the day of the procedure, at least 90 days after they've had their first assessment. So I'll give an example of one MAID death I heard about locally involved an elderly gentleman who was blind. He had no other diseases or disabilities except the blindness. He required a note from his ophthalmologist, who was a specialist, who treated him, and indicating there was no cure or suitable treatment. And this person, he waited his 90 days, qualified for a MAID death. He was competently able to give consent on the day of that he chose with his doctor. And basically it just proceeded like any other MAID death. And then some of the future changes this past March, 2023, they were supposed to have changes to requirements involving mental health illness only as a illness or disability. But due to some pushback from the public and some physicians, the government has postponed that till next March of 2024. Just to make sure that all the safeguards of, you know, protecting the patient are satisfactory to everybody involved. So Canada is definitely one of the more proactive countries in the world in regards to, number one, allowing nurse practitioners to be assessors and providers. And number two, that we will be adding mental health illness diagnoses only as a prerequisite for qualifying for a MAID death. Currently, if someone who, say, has schizophrenia or bipolar and they have cancer and it's the cancer they're dying from, they still qualify for MAID. But next March will be just mental health diagnosis only. So I haven't seen the safeguards for that as of yet. So I'm not sure what is all involved in those that application and the procedure piece of it, just, you know, to protect our that population. So yeah, we'll see what the government comes up with for that.
Okay. Well, we'll have to have you back when that actually happens. So basically, in summary, there's two tracks. One is when the death is reasonably foreseeable. The second track is when the person's not actually dying, but has a grievous medical condition that causes disease or disability. And so far the disability does not include anything related to mental health.
Yes, for sure. There are also other things that people are wanting the government to look into. And one of them is mature minors. A lot of kids over the age of 12 can consent to or withdraw from life-saving treatment. And there's people in the community that are saying, well, why can't they consent to MAID? So I think that will definitely be a lot more ethical because we're dealing with people under the age of 18, which is currently the requirement for MAID right now.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. So thanks for answering that.
No problem.
Yeah. So now on to organ and tissue donation. Can you tell the audience about the particulars of donation in Ontario?
So organ transplants occur for two reasons: to improve one's quality of life and independence, or to actually survive. In Ontario, our organization that coordinates and supports the organ and tissue donation process is the Trillium Gift of Life Network, located in Toronto. The mission of Trillium Gift of Life Network is to deliver and coordinate organ and tissue donation and then transplantation. They are involved with the planning, promotion, and support of healthcare professionals, as well as advocating and educating the public in fulfilling their shared and integrated responsibilities in saving the lives of Ontarians waiting for a life-saving transplant. Other duties of Trillium include establishing and maintaining the wait list, managing the procurement, distribution, and delivery of organs and tissues, assisting those designated facilities, so many of the hospitals in Ontario, not all, but many, and talking with those potential donors and our families about donation, organizing everything needed to procure those organs, as well as the teams involved in the procedures. Organs that can be harvested and transplanted are the heart, kidneys, liver, lungs, pancreas, and small intestine. Tissues can be eyes, like the corneas of the eyes, bone, skin, and heart valves. If the procured organs or tissues are not suitable for transplant, they can be used for research. Organ donation has many different types, but there is one that cannot be used in a made death, and that is the living donation of organs. So for obvious reasons, a living donation means the donor is still alive and donates a part of the organ, like a kidney or a portion of the liver, to save one's life. I'll explain the other types of donation scenarios next. The ability to donate organs is dependent on diagnosis. So people with cancer cannot donate organs, but may be able to donate some tissues. So this is basically because of the increased risk for the recipient of if any of those cancer cells, it only takes one, are still in that organ. So other neurological conditions like ALS, MS can certainly be used for organ donation, but ones that aren't actually diagnosed or very rapidly deteriorating conditions cannot donate their organs. And obviously those who cannot give consent are not eligible for donation.
So question, Julie.
Yes.
So that's made me think. So obviously now with made procedures, there are no stories, or is it allowed for organ donation after a made procedure?
We will get to that very shortly, Linda. So okay. I am going to talk about how we can actually do it. So stay tuned. One of the donation scenarios is called the deceased organ donation. So this is basically when someone suffers a traumatic event like a stroke or a severe head injury from an accident or something that progresses to a neurological determined death, or what most people have heard is brain death. In this case, the person must be supported by a ventilator. The heart must be pumping on its own. Basically, donation after death by circulatory determination offers those families the options for donations in situations where neurological criteria for death have not been met, but the decision is to withdraw life-sustaining treatments. Organ donation after MAE closely follows this process, so the death by circulatory determination. The second scenario is called a non-perfused organ donation. This occurs in some unexpected deaths, but the clinical protocols is only in place in a limited number of hospitals. This protocol has allowed for a greater number of patients to donate their lungs. Lungs have been recovered within 3 hours after death, can be used for donation if approved by that particular organ donation organization, so like Trillium. If after a failed resuscitation attempt and the patient has died, Trillium Gift of Life is contacted and informed of this death. And the clinical protocol has been applied to different death by circulatory determination cases. So just kind of like withdrawal of life-sustaining therapies. When the patient doesn't die within traditional timeframes for lung donations, usually it has to be done immediately after death. But there may be some circumstances when a May death has occurred at home, maybe they can still donate some organs. We'll go into more detail on about that shortly. The third type of donation is tissue donation. So if the patient has died either of a neurological determined death or a cardiopulmonary type of death, they can donate in either scenario. So, in other words, a neurological death is defined as the irreversible loss of brainstem activity or reflexes like coughing, gagging, pupillary responses to light and painful stimulation. So, neurological death is when the capacity for consciousness has been lost. Their heart still beats on its own, but the ability to breathe is no longer present, and the patient requires the assistance of a ventilator. In addition to the loss of brainstem reflexes, the known cause of death by neurological criteria must be established. In this type of scenario, multiple medications and ventilatory support are required to preserve the opportunity to donate. Hemodynamics, so blood pressure, all that kind of stuff has to be maintained. This process I have witnessed in the ICU I used to work in is very labor intensive, requiring one-to-one care. The donation coordinator guides the doctor in which tests to order and which medications to give. Yeah, so I've assisted in a couple of them, and they are very time consuming, very intensive, always doing blood work to check levels, always readjusting medications. The time of death is when the first completed determination of neurological death. Once that is done by the physician, that is their actual legal time of death, even though their heart's still beating and they're still breathing by a ventilator. Prior to donating organs, neurological death must be determined by two physicians. If you want some more information on those types of donations, you can visit giftoflife.on.ca, and they go into patient-specific and professional-specific information about donation.
Wow, this is just a whole like clinical area in and of itself. So you mentioned donation coordinator. Does that mean that in areas where there is organ donation, there is someone working that is maybe not part of the Trillium Gift of Life Network, but works for the institution that's educated in all of this?
No, it actually is a coordinator from Trillium. They have all that special training, and they guide us on basically from diagnosis to like the history leading up to the neurological death. They are the ones. We don't talk to the families at all. We don't mention donation. They are the ones we have to call Trillium Gift of Life and say, hey, we have this patient. You know, they are a massive stroke. They're at this age. You know, basically, the doctors will confirm neurological death. They're on a ventilator. So it's everything from the vent settings to blood pressure control meds to heart rate control meds. They're looking at, I mean, the amount of blood work and x-rays and CTs that need to be done to see if any of the organs would be viable. It's very extensive. And the two that we did at my local hospital when I worked in ICU, we did this for 12 plus hours, and they still did not end up qualifying in the end for particular reasons. I'm not even sure of the reasons, but it's done by the actual coordinator from Trillium. They arrange the team. So the Trillium recovery team will come up to one of our ORs. Trillium pays for everything. They pay for the hospital staff time. They pay for the recovery team's time, supplies, equipment use, all the medications we would use. So Trillium does pay for all of that stuff. And they do it in such a way that, yes, people still can have an open casket funeral if they do wish. But yeah, it's a coordinator. Sometimes the coordinators, if they're kind of local, they'll come up and sit with us in the ICU to help guide, or they all do it by phone.
Thanks for that information. How are Canada's numbers actually regarding organ and tissue donation?
Yeah, so I always like including stats and numbers because it really does give like an overall picture of the situation. I know it's definitely not everybody's cup of tea, all the stats, but so Let's talk about Ontario. So basically in general needs and supply resources. So the most recent stats that I could find off of the actual Trillium website is from January 1st of 2023 to July 31st. So we're not even talking a full year here. There were 208 deceased donors, as well as 173 living donations. Sometimes they'll bring in organs from other provinces. So deceased donors living outside of Ontario contributed to 66 donations. So that total for 7 months was 381 donors. Regarding transplants for that same time period, they were 826. So remember, one person can donate up to several organs as well as tissues. So that's why the number of donors is a lot less than the actual donations, is because people can donate multiple organs and tissues. So there were 826 people that received transplants. So as a wait list, as of August 17, 2023, in Ontario, there was 1,196 people waiting for a life-saving organ. Most of these are between the ages of 61 and 70, right? Because chronic diseases have now deteriorated their own organs to that point. The top three most needed organs are kidneys at 780, liver 219, and 66 lungs are needed. The Trillium website has all of these stats on there, and they're constantly being updated. And they also say, which is kind of shocking, the number of registered potential donors right now is 35% of Ontarians. So that's 4.7 million people who have signed up to be an organ donor out of the 13.2 million eligible people we have in Ontario. Since 2003, 22,921 Ontarians have received a transplanted organ. So one of the articles I read was done by CTV News, and Canada is performing more organ transplants from May donors than any other country in the world. Not everybody who will allow a May death does organ donation after a May death. So right now there's only four countries, and that's Spain, Belgium, the Netherlands, and us in Canada. From all of the countries mentioned, 286 assisted death recipients provided 837 people with vitally needed organs. For Canada, they perform almost half of those world transplants after May, so about 136. As of 2023, there are 4,000 Canadians on an organ wait list. This drive in numbers is largely due to patients asking about donation when they are considering a made option for their end-of-life care. Many of those inquiries are people suffering from neurological conditions like MS, ALS, and Parkinson's. Some of the studies from Canada and those other countries have researched that the viability and successful donations of donors who have had a made death, those harvested organs were not damaged and in fact actually worked really well, despite the fact that there are certain medications that we use for the MAID procedure. Basically, the meds that are used are large dose sedatives and anesthetics, so Versed or midazolam, lidocaine to numb the vein, nothing to do with the heart, propofol and rocuronium. So one of the articles that I read talked about this, cited that 8 out of 9 kidneys transplanted in Canada began working immediately after transplant. Like they didn't need to go on short-term dialysis until everything healed. There has been some similar success with lung transplants from a May donor. And there is ongoing research into the use of pancreatic islet cells to treat people with severe diabetes. So still lots of room for research on what can and can't be used, but definitely progressive from where we were before.
Can you discuss for the audience today the moral and ethical issues that are associated with MAID and organ donation?
Yes, of course. When MAID is involved, there's always moral and ethical dilemmas. There are those who object MAID, but definitely adding organ donation to that has caused some distress in some Canadians. Organ donation with this type of death has been described as controversial, evoking a new practice with tricky ethical and logistical issues involving the consent from our vulnerable populations. One article I researched discussed the increase in requests for organ donation by patients with advanced neuromuscular disorders who have themselves decided to have life-sustaining treatments withdrawn. The ability of those donors to give first-person consent for MAID and withdrawal of life-sustaining measures and organ donation has effectively created some emotional and moral challenges for healthcare workers and really raises the unprecedented ethical and practical issues for patients, families, society, those healthcare providers and institutions that allow MAID and donation to occur. So it really does affect a lot of people within society, not just healthcare workers, about some of these ethical issues related, A, number one, to MAID deaths, and number two, the involvement of organ donation with a MAID death. I learned that there needs to be necessary guidelines. They need to be in strict to ensure that the protection of the patients and really to enhance public trust in this matter. You know, we need to make sure that we're doing that necessary research into these topics. And one of the main themes of patient protection is that they should never feel pressure to have MAID to increase the availability of donor organs. All MAID or withdrawal of life support measure patients should be offered all end-of-life options. Additionally, this professor of health law and policy from University of Toronto, Trudeau Lemons, was noted saying in an article for CTV News that more than 35% of Canadians who died by MAID in 2021 felt they were a burden on family, friends, or caregivers. Also, he acknowledges that there is a concern that people who struggle with a lack of self-esteem or self-worth may be pushed to see this as an opportunity to add meaning to their lives. As I discuss the processes for donation with a MAID intervention, you'll see some of the safeguards in place to protect not only the patient, but all healthcare workers involved. Trillium Gift of Life Network with government legislation requires all hospitals to report all deaths, including anticipated and imminent. Hospital staff do not approach the family about donation. That's one of the many roles of the coordinator from Trillium. This is really to decrease emotional upset if it turns out their loved one was not eligible to donate, as Trillium is the one that decides this. If the patient or person, no matter the manner of death, is deemed not eligible for donation, palliative and end-of-life measures continue as planned. However, there may be still the opportunity to donate tissues, and the coordinator will determine that eligibility. Importantly, notifying Trillium of a potential MAID candidate does not mean the person has definitely been approved for MAID, nor are they even eligible for donation. This is kind of why they really only want to do donation requests after that MAID has been approved. Now, if the patient contacts Trillium on their own, the coordinator will collect information and get verbal consent to speak to their doctor about their inquiry. In contrast, if the person contacts their doctor about inquiring about MAID and organ donation, the doctor should acknowledge this type of inquiry, especially if donation is occurring if the decision for donation is occurring before MAID. Trillium allows general information to be provided on organ tissue donation, but specific or more detailed conversation should wait until the decision to proceed with MAID has been finalized. This is why they like to be like heavily involved with this aspect. They're the experts. They do this all the time. With consent for either MAID or donation, that patient's consent can be withdrawn at any time during the process, even up to the point just prior to administration of the medications used for the MAID procedure. In Quebec and Ontario, interestingly, physicians are telling patients earlier on about the possibility of organ tissue donation, unlike in other provinces and countries where the patients themselves must bring up the topic of a donation to their provider. Quebec's policy states, the law states if someone is going to die, donations should be offered and should be applied to MAID patients as well. Consent is also one of those more controversial aspects of organ donation after a MAID death. Legally, the person must have the ability to provide what we call first person consent to MAID or a withdrawal of life sustaining measures, and then consent to organ donation. Like I said, the patient can withdraw their consent for either procedure at any time for any reason, and palliative care, end of life care continues on. Now, family concerns or issues with the person's decisions are important, but they really should be supported throughout this process, not only for their own sake, but to retain trust in the organ donation process. And this is according to Trillium. Family refusals will not override the persistent request from the person who can make their own decisions regarding MAID and organ donation. Just like if the patient is a tract one MAID intervention, they have given their competent consent. If they've signed the advanced consent piece, become incapacitated on the day of their procedure, family cannot stop the procedure. The doctor still has that legal obligation to go by what the patient has requested and has signed in the advance consent policy. It's the only time the POA does not have a say in a healthcare decision. Determining death is another ethical issue in the MAID donation process. Canada has what we call a dead donor rule, in which the organs can only be harvested from a donor who is already deceased. In other words, the act of procuring those organs cannot be the immediate cause of death. After the transplant, the recipient is not to be informed that the donated organs came from someone who died via MAID. Only relevant medical information can be provided regarding the donor's underlying disease.
So now that you've explained that question, can you explain how organ donation occurs after MAID death in detail? I'm really interested in this because obviously MAID occurs in different organizations. So obviously hospitals, hospices, in the community, in your home. So could you explain how this works?
Oh, for sure, because it's a different procedure for kind of all of those places. So before MAID was legalized, patients could only donate their organs by withdrawing life support. So for example, patients in the ICU who are on a ventilator, brain death was required to be determined by two physicians. It's still that practice. Trillium is notified of that impending death or the withdrawal of life support. If the patient is eligible based on what the physician has given the coordinator, so diagnoses, kind of their hospital stay information and their current blood work, if the coordinator deems them eligible to continue on with the process, they will talk with the family about possibly donating. There are definitely multiple steps and issues associated with this organ procurement after MAID death. The process mirrors donation following withdrawal of life-sustaining therapy, but there are definitely some unique issues. Trillium has developed a toolkit specifically for organ and tissue donation after MAID death, so check it out on their website. That's where I got a lot of my information. The introduction statement actually reads, all efforts should be made to ensure the opportunity to donate organs and tissues is offered to every medically eligible Ontarian as part of high quality end of life care. In addition, they also want to ensure that each person should be extended autonomy and dignity to provide first person consent in accordance with their own preference for donation. So firstly, the patient's decision to seek MAID should be made prior to the initiation of any discussions about donation. This is basically to ensure the patient is not seeking MAID just to be a donor. Additional safeguards exclude the MAID and transplant teams from influencing the patient and each other. The patient must be approved by one physician before Trillium gets involved with the donation inquiry or request. So they have to have one of the two. So at this time, organ donation following MAID must occur in a hospital setting, and this is per Trillium's toolkits. This means that the provision of MAID needs to occur in a hospital that has the capacity to do organ donation. Like I said, not every hospital will do organ donation. However, interestingly, there is talk about how to possibly do this outside the hospital environment. One article I read talked about this new emerging trend. There are now 8 documented cases in the world, with 5 of them being in Canada, in which providers offered assisted death in the community home of the patient. This process involves administering the medications in the patient's home, and then the deceased was immediately transferred by ambulance to a nearby hospital where the procedure was completed and the organs were recovered. There is actually one case in Ontario, and according to the person interviewed in the article, with a lot of help from paramedics in the fire department, we were able to facilitate this. Obviously, this requires immense planning, and it's still in the very early stages of this option. I would assume, I haven't seen any of the details, but I would assume they have to be within a certain distance of the hospital. The ambulance is sitting outside of the home when this is going on. The OR team, the transplant team are all ready to go in that OR to recover those organs. So everybody's like on board. And so we'll see how this continues to play out over time. Now, if the patient is determined to be eligible, the Trillium coordinator will contact the most responsible physician to discuss that plan of care regarding the Trillium representative contacting the patient, necessary medical orders for screening, and all of the requirements of the plan of care, which is very intensive. If the coordinator is unable to obtain consent for donation, then end-of-life plans continue, whether that still involves MAID or not. If consent is obtained, the coordinator contacts back the doctor, completes the written consent form, as well as the medical and social questionnaire with the patient. Then with the doctor, they will call the office of the chief coroner and speak with the MAID nurse investigator for permission to proceed with donation. So this is with organ donation. Normally, the doctor would not call the coroner's office to report a MAID death until after the MAID death. But if we're going to take organs, this has to be all done ahead of the MAID death. One of the actions from the MAID provider in a MAID death is to speak with the MAID nurse at the coroner's office after the procedure is completed. So without donation, this is only done after death. But with donation, like I said, it's got to be done before. There will be screening and testing that needs to be completed prior to donation. So many of those patients will need to be admitted to the hospital 1 to 2 days prior to having their MAID. Unlike those on life support who will be withdrawing this therapy, a patient coming in for MAID then having donation will not need to have that invasive monitoring until immediately before the procedure. But if the patient refuses to have arterial monitoring, that kind of thing, or if, say, they've got really, really bad access and they can't do that type of monitoring, the doctor is to call Trillium and an alternative method of cardiac monitoring will be done. So some of the options are an EKG, so they need to prove a systole, so flatline in 2 leads after respiratory arrest, carotid perfusion with ultrasound, Doppler monitoring, or an aortic valve ultrasound are some of those options. It's really up to whoever is going to be on the recovery team to really decide that. Timing for the organ recovery is obviously very dependent on when the MAID is going to occur. So everybody in the OR is ready. And it's also very dependent on the OR resources. You know, if it's a busy season, like up at my area, the OR is always busy with skiers. So they kind of have to really plan this well. Ideally, the MAID procedure should be done in a private room near the OR, as there's only minutes between that time of death and the start of the procurement of organs. The IV medications that we use in Canada to perform MAID do not interfere with organ and tissue recovery and the use of the organs. However, the self-administered oral medication route does make the patient ineligible for donation. So most MAIDs done in Canada are by IV. In the U.S., it's done by oral. Self-announcement of death after MAID, 2 physicians must declare death. And there is a 5-minute hands-off protocol that must be followed. So normally only the physician providing me needs to pronounce, but because we're actually procuring organs and opening the person up to get to those organs, they really have to have two physicians declare death. And the 5-minute hands protocol basically means nobody touches the patient. They monitor the EKG or whatever type of hemodynamic monitoring they're doing to ensure death. After they've been declared dead, the patients move to the OR and the recovery team starts their procedures. The final determination for organ suitability will be determined by that transplant team. Organ recovery times vary on how many organs are being retrieved. So for example, one or more organs will take about 6 hours to recover. It is a sterile process, just like any other operation. If there's more than one organ being procured, there's often more than one team involved, you know. So the heart may have a heart team, a cardiac thoracic recovery team. If it's the liver, if it's the kidneys, they will have different people. An additional consideration is the updated MAID protocol since the 2021 legislation changes involving the two-track system of those eligible for MAID. So as I said at the beginning, if a patient is a track one candidate for MAID and has signed that waiver of final consent, MAID can occur on the signed day of if they lose that capacity to give informed consent. So regarding organ donation, the initial consent will be upheld and donation can be facilitated even if they cannot give consent closer to the date of donation. And another scenario, if a track one MAID patient has given consent for MAID, but loses the capacity before they give first person consent for organ and tissue donation, the patient's POA or SDM should be talked to in order to ascertain if the patient is, number one, a registered donor, or maybe, you know, they would think that the patient would want to donate. You can still donate without registering on beadonor.ca, which is Trillium's site for donation requests. Those people who are track two candidates for MAID that have been approved should have those discussions in regards to donation, because at that point they still have to give first person consent for their MAID on the day of. And this can happen at any time after their eligibility for MAID has been confirmed. So it could be any time during that 90-day reflection period. It could be after, whichever they get. Track two candidates must give final consent on the day of the procedure. And it also needs consent required prior to transfer to the hospital for organ retrieval. And that's kind of a new recommendation since all the new tracks. This population should be referred to their provincial organ donation organization. So for Ontario, it's Trillium Gift of Life. If they ask about donation, regardless of where they're at in their reflection period.
That's so much information. It's just, it's like I said, a whole clinical area in and of itself.
For sure. And that's why I recommend that after the podcast that people still are interested or need to review some of this complex information to definitely visit the Trillium Gift of Life Network site and go to their MAID and organ donation toolkit.
So obviously it's quite the process for the retrieval of organs, no matter what scenario. And is tissue donation this complicated as well?
No, Linda, it's not quite as complex as in donating organs, because organs still need to be oxygenated within a time frame before cell death occurs. So that's why the majority of MAID deaths occur in the hospital, and they are trialing the in-home piece of it if they live close enough to a facility. So the initial process of obtaining consent and organizing the recovery is basically the same as the organ donation piece of it. The decision for a MAID death and tissue donation should occur at separate times. And then the person really only needs the approval of one of the two physicians to inquire about tissue donation. The doctor will then contact Trillium Gift of Life to inform the coordinator of this approval. The coordinator will collect the information, review the registry to see if they've already done their request online. If the person's not eligible, all palliative end-of-life measures continue as the person wishes. If eligibility is achieved, the donation coordinator contacts the most responsible physician to discuss the plan of care. If the patient consents to tissue donation, then nothing else needs to happen until after the MAID procedure is completed. Within 1 hour post-death, the MAID provider will contact Trillium, and the coordinator will collect all the information they need, so date, time, and death, and the name of the funeral home. The MAID provider will then call the coroner's office to report the death as per usual, and will discuss the case and obtain permission to proceed with tissue donation. Then the coordinator will arrange the tissue recovery. Ocular or eye recovery can be done in a morgue. I've done them on hospice. I've been trained to do eye enucleations. But really, if they're going to obtain multiple tissues, then they might need an OR, especially if the patient's already been hospitalized, or the funeral home if it was a home death. The funeral home will then transport the body for tissue recovery based on the coordinator's instructions. So with tissue donation, obviously the donor's already deceased, and the retrieval can occur several hours post-mortem. I know when I used to do eye enucleations, we had up to 12 hours post-death. You know, you had to have the head of the bed at a certain angle. You had to install eye drops and put ice packs on their eyes. So some tissues need certain procedures done to maintain viability until they can be procured. Tissue procurement can happen outside the hospital environment, but like I said, if numerous tissues are being removed, they may want to do this in a more sterile environment. So Trillium has their preferred location, and it's the tissue recovery suite at Toronto's Forensic Services and Coroner's Complex. We always used to call it the Forensic Science Center, or an available OR. Like I said, we try to keep this as sterile as possible. And this tissue recovery can take 48 hours to complete, especially if they're doing multiple tissue recovery.
How can someone actually register then to be an organ tissue donor in Ontario?
So yeah, anyone can be a donor, and ideally it would be best to register at beadonor.ca. It only takes a couple of minutes to sign up. It's through Service Ontario. It's also important to inform your power of attorney, SDM, and family of your wishes to be a donor in the event of your death. I just signed myself up, my son up, and God forbid anything happens to my daughter, who's only 9 years old, that I would donate her organ as well. The chances of getting pediatric organs are very, very low. So if there's no reason, there, you know, kids can donate as well. Babies can donate. So really anybody of any age can donate, from like after birth up to, I think it's like around age 80 for organs. And I think their oldest tissue donor was 105. So like I said, there's, you know, lots of opportunity to donate. If somebody's got really bad lungs, doesn't mean that their kidneys are bad or their eyes are bad. So there, with eye donation, there's only a few diseases, more of the bloodborne, like HIV, hepatitis, that disqualifies them. But if family still wants to donate, a lot of them will be used for research or for clinical practice with ophthalmologists and medical students. So even if they don't qualify to be transplanted into someone else, there's still definitely important use of any organ or tissue.
So if you're 16 and driving a car, obviously there's the piece on your driver's license for organ donation.
Yeah.
So if, like, say for someone younger than 16, where can you just explain, how do you actually sign them up?
I haven't tried to sign up my daughter. Basically, when I signed myself and my son, who's 23, up, they just wanted your health card number. your address, telephone number, and email, and then they send you an email. And my son also got a letter in the mail confirming the registration and a thank you and all that kind of stuff. I think when it comes to pediatrics, now don't quote me, but I think it is really dependent on the condition, the injury or the disease of the child, and you would definitely need parental consent, I believe. Because my ex-husband and I are separated, we would need both parental consents for that as well. But it's something definitely I'm going to look up more. And I told my son, you know, if something happens to me and her, we're in a car accident or something, you know, if eligible, please donate her organs, right? We don't want to miss the opportunity to help another child out. And right. my daughter is very caring and compassionate, and even though I have not discussed this with her as of yet due to her neurological condition, it would be something she would definitely be approved of. So.
Well, Julie, that's been a very informative session. So obviously in the work we do in palliative care and a palliative approach to care, it's sometimes very difficult getting people to talk about death. And I can also see it's very difficult then to talk about death and organ and tissue donation. So obviously Ontario is doing some pretty good work and Canada is doing some pretty good work.
Yes. And I only see with further research and further trials of doing at home made and then proceeding to the hospital for organ donation, you know, things will change in the future. Hopefully things will get better and it becomes easier to do in a home environment. So people can have their wish for a death at home or at hospice or whatever without having to be, you know, admitted to the hospital just to have your maid death and to be able to donate. But I think if people were really wishing to donate, it's a small sacrifice of having a maid death in a hospital to be able to carry on your legacy and that kind of stuff. So in the article that I read about those 8 cases of out of hospital made deaths with organ donation, there was never, plus the articles I read about in hospital made deaths, there was never a question of, you know, I wish we could do it, but we can't, you know, those kind of scenarios. But yeah, so, you know, a lot of people in Canada still don't know made is legalized and people can have a made death for whichever reason they may want it, but they would probably certainly not even think about donating organs. And I asked a few of my local physicians who have done MAID, you know, did you ever ask your patients about donation or have any of your patients asked about donation with a MAID death? And one said that they did, the patient wanted to donate his body to science. So he had his at-home MAID death. And then he was able to donate his body to science. So not actual organ or tissue procurement, but he did donate his whole body for science. So I'm hoping doctors will kind of start talking to their patients a bit more about organ donation. And Trillium will certainly come up and do educational talks for community healthcare providers. You know, they have the whole campaign for April, which is organ donation month. Yeah, so hopefully we're going to start seeing a bit more promotion of it, right? So, yeah, so something to think about if you want to be a donor.
Yeah, for sure, absolutely something to think about. And maybe for a future podcast, we could have someone from Trillium actually come and speak with us.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
Thank That's you a great so idea. Much, Julie, for the very interesting and very informative discussion. And we'll talk soon.